The Mickey Miles podcast is brought to you by MEI Travel and Mouse Fan Travel, who will handle your family vacation, reunion, honeymoon, corporate incentive trip, or getaway as if it were their own, bringing premium service and expert advice to help you get the most out of your vacation dollar. Visit them at MEI-travel.com or mousefantravel.com.
This is Rick from Valencia, and I love listening to the Mickey Miles podcast.
This is the Mickey Miles and More podcast. Your one stop for information on Disney races, Disney vacations, Disney theme parks, and more. Now, here are your hosts for the Mickey Miles and More podcast, Michelle Scribner-McLean, Chris Eliopoulos, and Mike Scopa.
Welcome to episode 459 of the Mickey Miles and More podcast. My name is Michelle Scribner-McLean, and with me on the show today is the lovely, the talented, the always effervescent Christopher Eliopoulos.
I honestly thought that was going to Mike.
I know, this is wacky day, so starting with Chris. I'm hosting.
Shot check cleared, Chris.
I'm hosting. We're introducing you first. So, Chris, since it's wacky day, we're switching it up, and you're giving the tip today, right?
Sure. So if you're going to Animal Kingdom as you're approaching the gates to get in, if you want to avoid if there's a lot of big crowds, there's a secret entrance into Animal Kingdom. If you hook a left and go into the Rainforest Cafe and walk through the store area and towards the back, you'll find that there are a couple of gates to get in. So they will scan you in over there. Now, sometimes you get bitten because there's a few people who know this trick, but you can avoid all the crowds if you just go through the Rainforest Cafe to get in.
I wonder what our friend Angel would say about that. All right. So also with us on the show is the slightly under the weather, yet nonetheless entertaining, Michael Scopa. Michael, welcome to the show.
Thank you, Michelle. It's great to be back. Thank you for inviting me. It's been a long time.
Yes,
how
it has
are you?
Been. I'm fine. How are you?
I'm fine. How's the show doing?
The show. Well, you placed it in my capable hands, right?
Yes. Sorry.
So,
hey, guess what?
What?
It's wacky day, so I'm going to do a shout-out.
Okay.
And it's none other than the only shout-out is going to...
Holly Olin.
Going to Holly Olin.
I read your mind.
Because Holly Olin, in her quest to do a marathon in each of the 50 states, did number 41 in Arizona. So congratulations, Holly, and we're with you. 9 more to go, kiddo.
Yeah. That's awesome. Mm-hmm. Congratulations, Holly. And I'm doing the song, and I tend to embarrass my children because my music taste is sort of like their music taste in some ways. I don't know if they like this song, but it's one of my absolute favorite running songs by Skrillex, which is kind of electro music, and it's Bangarang. Love that song. Love it. I always turn it up.
I think Neil Diamond has done it.
Yeah, it's Bangarang. Play it. I bet Chris will like it. All right, so we have the more part of the Mickey Miles and More going today, and that is because our one and only Chris Eliopoulos had something very special and cool happen yesterday. I know, it is typical. Like, he and I pretty much talk every day by text, and he didn't even mention it. He just kind of posted a picture, and then...
Did he meet Neil Diamond?
He did not meet Neil Diamond, but he did something really, really cool, and it happened in New York. And I don't know really anything about the story as to why it happened, but it had something to do with one of his new books, which is I Am Jim Henson. So, Chris, where did you go yesterday?
I went to the Museum of the Moving Image in Astoria, Queens, the town I was born in.
Wow.
I was born in Queens.
Yeah.
You were born in Queens. Very cool.
I was. Look, Greeks are only allowed to be born in Greece, Chicago, and Astoria. It's a law in the Greek culture, unless you know that. So.
Okay.
Yeah, Astoria is very big Greek culture. My grandmother lived there for like 50 years. Hmm. We'd go visit her when I was a little kid. Every Sunday we would have dinner at her apartment. So.
And you were born during one of those dinners?
My parents lived there initially for the first – well, I was there for the first 10 months, but they were there a little bit before. And then about 10 months after I was born, we moved to New Jersey. I've been a New Jersey guy.
So it's the Museum of the Moving Image?
Correct. So it's all about TV and video games.
I've heard about it,
movies.
But I never knew where it was. Okay.
Yeah, it's a really, really cool museum. They have lots of different kind of exhibits there, and they're going to be doing a permanent Jim Henson exhibit where they're going to have original Muppets on display and videos and all things. So it's in the middle of being put together. It should be done hopefully by late spring, early summer. And so when we did this Jim Henson book, we've been in contact with a man by the name of Craig Shemin, who works for the Henson Company and does a lot of their promotions and does a lot of stuff for this exhibit that's coming up. His wife, as a matter of fact, plays Prairie Dawn on Sesame Street these days. Lovely lady.
Love Prairie Dawn.
Yeah, so it's funny the way this all went down. Back last – I guess it's May. We have free comic book day every year. Comic book stores put out free books. We make free books and they give them away for that day. And then they usually have creators come and hang out and draw and for guests who come to visit.
At that museum or just
at all comic book stores all over the country, all over the world.
That's nice.
So it's a nice little event to kind of drum up interest in comic books. And, so I had gone to one up in Harrison, New York, and a couple of friends were there too. We were chatting, and Craig happened to be there, and I was working on the Jim Henson book, and he was like, "Oh yeah, you're the artist on that book, okay?" And so I showed him some of the stuff I was working on, and we got into talking, and he's like, "If you need anything, if you want to come visit the workshop, if you want to go visit Sesame Street, let me know." And I was like, "Oh, okay." And I honestly thought he was just like one of those people that say they can do something for you, and they really can't. They're just, you know, trying. But and then at New York Comic Con, he came up and we were chatting again, and he had said, "Hey, can you do me a favor? You know, can you?" He asked me to basically do a drawing for his wife for her birthday, and which I did, and it was great. And so we went back and forth a little bit, and he's like, "You know, we'd like to have you at the museum for an event. We've been doing events about Jim Henson and his creations and all that stuff, and we'd love to have you come and talk about the books, talk about the Jim Henson book." So I said, sure. And then we had an event when we launched the book. So Brad and I went to this event in Tribeca, New York, and we were lucky enough to have Cheryl Henson, Jim Henson's daughter, there.
Oh, my gosh.
So we had an event. We shared the stage, and we had conversations about Jim Henson, and it was a really – and so Craig was there, and it was a wonderful event to launch this Jim Henson book, which went on to go number 2 on the New York Times bestseller list, humble brag.
That's awesome.
Yeah, so she's a lovely lady, and we were talking about, you know, the making of the book and just how hard it was in anybody's mind to get Disney, the Henson Company, Sesame Street, and the Henson family all signing off on a book.
Oh, Sesame Street had to sign off too because images that
we have their characters
show
in the book.
Yeah.
Yep. So we had to get everybody. We had to get everybody's approval, and believe it or not, and I'm surprised because Disney does not allow Kermit on anybody's cover except their own sales. Like anything that they sell, they can do, but they don't allow them on any other books. When they all saw this book, they just knew it was something special, and they graciously let us do that, and they all agreed to it, and in fact the Henson family has been actually really, really gracious in kind of supporting it. And so Cheryl joined us on that event, and then Brad had gone out to LA, and Lisa Henson did an event with him out there, and they really, really loved the book, which is, you know, so gratifying to know that the family of the man, the subject that we did, felt so strongly.
Can I stop you for a second? Are you saying that you illustrated this book, and at any point it could have all gone down the tubes if along the way did not appreciate what you did?
Correct. We got to the point. It actually was, we were waiting on approvals for so many things. We were almost in danger of not making our print date. Everything was done. It was just waiting to get the approvals and make sure that everything was set. And we were actually worried that we might have to just insert pictures of the Muppets, because you can use pictures, but not, you know, images of them unless you had approval, blah blah blah. So it was a little touch and go.
I'm listening to you and I'm thinking, why would you not have sign offs beforehand? So what you're saying is that they needed to review the content, they needed to review the finished product, and make sure that that was with their approval before they would sign off. So that was how that's how the sequence goes. You give them a final copy, a final product, and then they review, and then they sign off. Is that how
they're
it
probably
works?
Okay with the idea, but they have to see.
Yeah,
it.
But they have to see the finished product.
There were approvals all along the way. We had to send them the script initially. They had to approve the script. I would send pencils. They would approve. Like, you know, it was great in that you have the family telling you stuff. And like when we were designing the character, like Cheryl had said, no, like I had put him in like Chuck Taylor's or something like that. And she's like, he never wore sneakers. He wore these other shoes. And so I had to change the way, you know, I drew the character for that. Or she had said, you know, my grandmother was. Yeah. Oh, she got very specific, which is great because, you know, you want to get it right. It's a history book. And, you know, she said, well, you know, my grandmother was very fastidious. She was very clean and neat, and everything had to be put in its place. And the way I had drawn her living room was a little messy. And she's like, no. My grandmother was like a proper lady. She had to have everything. So it was great to sort of have those moments where, you know, I mean, it meant, you know, fixing things, redrawing them. But it was a really cool thing to have, you know, the daughter there to tell you what it was really like. And So needless to say, so Craig was and his wife were at this event because they helped set it up, and so Craig said, okay, we're going to be doing. And we had talked ahead of time and said, we're going to do this event at the museum ahead of time. Originally, the way it was going to work, the date was different, and Cheryl was going to join me there for the event, and they thought they were going to have the museum open by the exhibit open by that point, and but. They've run into some snags, and so things are a little slower than as they always do. And then they switched the date, and Cheryl couldn't make the date. But at the event, at the bookstore event, I told the story about I shared this one with you about visiting Sesame Street?
No, I don't think you did.
So I know I'm not going to shut up this whole thing, but so when I was about 10 years old, my sister was good friends with Bob McGrath, who is on Sesame Street. Bob.
Oh, yeah, Bob you did. Fun. You did, but I don't know if you shared it on the podcast. Now I remember.
Okay.
Yeah, go.
So my sister had come home one day, and of course Bob McGrath's daughter goes to school with my sister, of course. I mean, that doesn't happen to everybody. And so my sister came home and said, they're gonna take us to Sesame Street. Take me to Sesame Street. And of course I did what any, you know, strong 10-year-old boy did. I cried like a little baby. And I just was relentless because for me, I grew up on Sesame Street. That was like my babysitter, as my mother would say, as a little kid. I would watch it. She would, you know, go do stuff around the house or whatever. And I would be sitting in front of Kermit and, you know, Big Bird and Ernie and Bert and all the characters. And that was sort of my babysitter. So for me, I was like, oh, my God, I would love to go there. Like, that'd be so amazing. So I cried like for a couple of days to the point where my mother was so like didn't know what to do. She actually called Bob up and just said, look, my son is dying to go. Do you think it's at all possible to take him? And he said, yes. And so one fateful day, he came by, picked us all up, picked me and my sister up. And I sat in the front seat with Bob, and Bob said, okay. And he took a tape cassette.
That was before they had seatbelts, right?
Probably. And he had, you know, the tape deck, and so he put the tape recorder in, and he said, just listen to me. Just do not – I need quiet, because he basically was using the tape recorder to memorize his lines.
Oh.
So – which was very interesting. And
how did he do that with the tape recorder?
Well, not a tape recorder, but a tape cassette. He had recorded his lines on the tape and then was playing it back and forth so he could keep repeating it and get his lines down. And we got to the studios, which were in Manhattan. And I remember being a bit confused as a 10-year-old, not understanding that it was a set. I thought it was like a real place, like, you know, Sesame Street, right? Because it looks like those brownstones you see around Manhattan. It just was sort of like – or in Brooklyn or something like that, you would see those. And so we kind of went in the building, and then we were behind these curtains, and we come out, and boom, there's Sesame Street right in its glory. And there's, you know, cameras and people walking around, and there was this tall, thin man walking around with Big Bird's legs on, and I was really confused by that one. But again, as a different time, like Bob was like, look, I have to go get in makeup, you know, don't get in trouble, walk around, you know, and that was it. I got free rein to walk around Sesame Street as a 10-year-old. Nobody questioned me. Nobody said anything. Like, it was just like there was – I walked into Mr. Hooper's store and I looked at the shelves. I walked around all the areas and I looked up at one point and there was Snuffleupagus hanging from the ceiling. And I was wondering if anybody else could see him. I thought it was maybe just me. Hmm. But that's the way they held the costume. They kept it up in the rafters to get it out of the way because it was such a big costume. Bob had come out and they were basically doing scenes, and I sat on the front stoop on the railing next to Oscar the Grouch's can. And the way it works is like the back of the can is cut out for Carol Spiney to puppeteer from there. He does Oscar the Grouch as well as Big Bird.
He's from Massachusetts.
I had to say that, of course.
Yes.
It always comes back to New Hampshire and Massachusetts, doesn't it? Every story.
I'm telling you.
So in the back there, they also have monitors to watch the video, so like the puppeteer can watch how the scene is playing out. So I got to watch them record parts of an episode from Oscar the Grouch's video screen. And it was a really magical day. It was it was one of those things I had said, I think my creative spark really took off at that moment. It was, Star Wars had just come out. I got to go Sesame Street. The Muppet Show was just coming on, and it really fired my creativity and I think kind of catapulted me towards a career in the arts. And so I had told that story and basically Jim Henson's been a part of my life since I was a toddler, since a little kid.
Jim Henson?
Never. Wow. By that point, he had kind of moved off the show, and everybody else was sort of puppeteering the characters on their own. He had moved on to the Muppet Show by that point.
Right.
So then Craig had was kind of setting me up for this event, which I honestly thought there were going to be like three people coming. Like, I knew of a couple people that were going to show up. I assumed it wasn't that big of a deal, and I'm like, I'm going all the way out to Queens. And I'm going to talk for 10 minutes and people are going to be bored and then I'll go home. And but he had said, send me some drawings, anything you want to project up on the screen while you're talking. So I had sent some like early preliminary pencils I've done or when I was working on the character, trying to get it down, and how we went back and forth with Cheryl and everybody trying to get this right. And then he had said, oh, by the way, I really want you to tell that story about Sesame Street. And I said, sure. And so he said, why don't you, and I said, oh, let me do this. I usually take a page that's in the pencil stage, then in the ink stage, and then the color stage, and you can show people the progression of a drawing and how it goes from, an idea all the way to the end. And so I said, I'll do the Sesame Street one. It'll go well with that one. And Bob is on the page, so I thought, if he wants that story, I can have Bob on the page and show that I had, And we got there, but my wife and my son Jeremy came with us. My son Justin was working, so he missed the fun. But we got there, and Craig was waiting for us, and he's like, "Oh yeah, we sold out. Like it's a 150 seat amphitheater, and we sold out of tickets."
Fun.
And I was like, oh. And I was like, oh, I guess this is a real thing now, huh? And so and then I said, oh, just show me what it looks like, because I thought it was going to be like a small little room. And it turned into like one of those, like a real amp, like it had theater seats that extended up and a big giant projection screen, a mini stage and stuff like that.
Sounding shocked that people would make a big deal about having you come?
Well, it's me. It's not a big deal. You're going to have some guy, a cartoonist, come talk about drawing. How boring is that? And and we set up an easel so that I could do some live drawing while I was there. And then what Craig did was he started off with he talked a little bit about the museum, and he talked about the upcoming exhibit, and then he showed up on this, and it's a big screen. It's like a movie screen.
Yeah, I saw your picture on Facebook.
It's huge. And so he showed the Jim Henson American Express commercial. Do you remember those old ones?
Yeah, of course. Yeah.
You don't know me, but and then shows the card, but it had the Muppets, so everybody loved it. And then so he said, all right, we're gonna, we have this new book that's out, and Chris is here. And so he brought me on stage, and we kind of talked a little bit about the book and that kind of stuff. And then And then and he was just like, okay, you know, I want you to tell that story about Sesame Street. And I had sort of gotten into that story, and I had talked about like being in the car while I was practicing lines. And then this voice bellows out of the speaker singing Beautiful Day in the Neighborhood. And right, is that the song? Oh no, not Beautiful Day in the Neighborhood. What's the Sesame Street?
That's Come. Mr. Rogers, yeah.
Yeah, I was gonna say
Sunny Day.
Sunny Day.
Sunny Day.
Yep, that one. So he starts singing, and I thought, oh God, because afterward we were supposed to have a video presentation. That it was a show that was a what is it, like a retrospective of Jim Henson, and that was done like right after he passed. And so I thought, oh, this video guy screwed up, and they started playing the thing, and I'm looking around to see where it's coming from. And next thing you know, Bob McGrath comes walking out on stage singing the song. And I lost my S. Like, I just totally lost it. I became that 10-year-old kid again.
Oh, and, my gosh.
And he comes over to shake my hand. I just glommed onto him, getting a big, giant hug.
Did he remember you, Chris?
You know, it's funny. Craig said he said he remembered the name but not the story. He goes, I don't doubt that I did it. I just don't remember doing it. Well, how would anybody remember an event from, you know, 40 years ago? And it was funny. So he came to sit down, and like I went to go grab a glass of water, my hand was shaking.
Oh, Chris!
I can public speak. I can talk to anybody. Like for me, it's not a big deal to get in front of a bunch of people and talk. I do it all the time. But I got really freaked out. I was so excited. I looked at my wife, and I'm like pointing my hand. My hand is shaking. I'm like freaking out. And so I continued the story with Bob, and we were laughing about the whole thing, and. But it was just an amazing moment, because I was surprised. I didn't know Craig was bringing him, I guess because he heard the story. He thought it would be really fun, and they have connections to everybody. And they're actually good friends with Bob, like him and his wife. So it was sort of like this cool, wonderful moment. And it was a really, like, I just was like on cloud nine that whole time. I gasped when he came out, but I heard it from the – because the audience didn't know he was coming either. So they all freaked out. Like, everybody that was there was just like, oh, my God, it's Bob.
Everybody loves Bob. And you said he's in his 80s now, right?
He's 84.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow.
But he was just – he was right there, and he was a joy. Like, he was telling stories about – like, I wanted to be in the audience to just listen to Bob talk. Like, wow. I was done at that point. But, you know, we had – you know, we talked about the book and – and then I actually asked him about it, you know, Jim, and just said, you know, do you have any memories of Jim and working with Jim? And so he told a couple of wonderful stories about working with Jim and how, you know, what a delight it was. And so, you know, it was just a real great moment. And then we showed some more of the images that I did. And, you know,
had he seen the book, Chris?
I don't know if he had seen the book up to that point. Mm-hmm. And so, but when he came in, it was great because we had those images of Sesame Street, and we laughed because I said, "Look, I told everybody the Sesame Street that I draw there is my Sesame Street from like the 1970s." Because they laughed, they said, "That's the old set," and I said, "Damn right it is. It's going to be my Sesame Street." I said, "I'm putting Bob in." Because Bob took me there, you know, like, and so, like, I had made some, you know, distinct choices, and they, you know, everybody seemed to like the fact that I was, you know, damned it, if I will, I'm going to get Bob onto this, you know, page, and so it was great to actually have him and have him see for the first time, him drawn into a book, up on this big giant screen right behind him, and so, wow. Yeah, it was a great moment, and so we talked. Disney, we talked about Sesame Street, we talked about, you know, and it was interesting. And then we had a question and answer period, and it was great because, you know, they'd ask him some questions, ask us both questions, the final question is, I have no clue why this person asked it, but they asked what our favorite Sesame Street song was.
Hmm.
And I was like, oh, wow. And so Bob's was Sing a Song.
Yeah, he did. I told you I had a crush on Bob when I was 5. I had that on an album or something, and I used to sing that. Yeah, because he that was his solo song, right?
That was his song.
Yeah, and I think I sang it in chorus when I was in elementary school. Love that song.
And so he had said that, you know, when he does concerts or when he did concerts, that was always like he had to close with that song because everybody wants that song. Everybody loves that song. And so it was so great to hear. And then, of course, I talked about that. Mine was It's Not Easy Being Green. And I said, was this short little kid that was geeky and felt like a total outsider. And I really related to that song, so it was an important thing. And I said, you know, basically Bob jump started my career, and it was so great to like sort of have this closure moment of, you know, telling this story to people all the time about how Bob, you know, lived in my neighborhood, and he lived on Sesame Street just around the corner.
No, but the other thing too is that, you know, as a teacher and just as a human being, that, you know, the idea that a kind act, whether or not you remember it,
yeah,
40 years later or whatever, however many years later, a kind act that you might not remember, whether it's just, you know, helping somebody out in something that doesn't mean really anything to you, can really resonate and make a difference in people's lives. So that's such a great story.
It's a great moment. And like, and that's the great thing too. I get to really like thank him in that moment and be like, you know, you helped jumpstart my career into the arts. Like,
what
a
thrill for him. I mean, to hear that.
I hope. I mean, he must hear this from everybody all the time. I mean, you had to see. So like, so after we had our discussion, they played this. It's fairly rare. Craig said it wasn't really. It's not really shown often, or I don't even know if it's online. But it was sort of this. The Muppets did like a dedication show to Jim Henson, and it's sort of like the theme of it was like Kermit was away and sent a note to everybody on the Muppet Show and said, you need to do this, you know, a show dedicated to Jim Henson. And they don't know who Jim is. And they make like jokes like they're these people that are always below them. And wherever they go, these people follow them around and they look down and they're trying to get away from the people. Like, they won't go away. It was really meta. and then they sort of kind of try to put together a show. And then they sort of do, a biography of him, and they go back and they talk about where he grew up and how he got started and all that stuff. And it was a wonderful show. I mean, I wish they had it online, and hopefully they'll play it like at the museum again. But it was actually, for Muppet fans or Disney fans, it's a really, really great show. And when it finished up, you know, we sort of said thank you, and then we had a signing. So like a bunch, like they were selling the books, and so everybody was buying the books and coming to heaven. And I'm like, you have to have Bob sign with me. Like, he's here. You got it.
Of course.
So we got set up and we sat down. And it was a thrill. I'm sitting there signing autographs with Bob next to me. And I'm signing the book. And then he's signing the book that I drew him in. And but it was amazing to watch these, you know, 30, 40, 50-year-old people just become 10-year-old kids again coming up to Bob. Like, I love you, and, you know, like just totally losing it. And he was so gracious and so, you know, like, he's the guy you saw on the show. He was this gracious, pleasant, like, so
you
open.
You want him to be your neighbor.
I really do. Like, and what's funny is, like, so we were laughing. And I said, so, you know, I grew up in this town called Teaneck, New Jersey. And so that's, you know, obviously where he lived. And he said, yeah, I still live there. I'm like, you're in the same home? And he's like, yeah, we're moving soon. We're moving in a couple of months up to – I won't give away the town because I don't want people seeking him out. But, and I said, oh my God, that's the next town over from me.
Oh.
And he's like, what? I'm like, yeah, I was just there today. Like, as we're recording, I was there like an hour before we started recording. I was just in that town. And I'm like, we should go to dinner. We should hang out.
Yes.
Invite
your friend Michelle.
Yeah. Well,
that's,
I could
so
see
cool.
Like, you know, that moment of him going, yeah, sure, let's get together. But it was amazing. And like I said, it was just and then even during the event. So Stephanie, who is Craig's wife, who plays Prairie Dawn, she actually was one of the original cast members. If you remember Avenue Q.
Yeah, of course.
Which
went
was
to
a Broadway
see it last
show.
Year.
Yeah, it was
son,
sort of like
yeah.
And she was, she was a puppeteer on that. Mm. And so it was, and she's a lovely, I mean, she is just like so bright and energetic. So they were giving out gifts for people. Like, they did little raffles and people's tickets, and they gave away, you know, Jim Henson stuff and from the company and Sesame Street. And then while I was out, when I was drawing, I was doing sketches on the board, and they kind of called out and gave them out to kids. The kids out in the audience, we gave them drawings for the kids. And she, like, it was just a, it was like such a magical day. Like, I could not get over you know, the experience. Like, it was like, wow. Like, I felt like I was 10 years old again seeing Bob and being able to, like, my wife kept saying, you know, you knew him as a 10-year-old and you're a peer now. And I'm like, I am nowhere near a peer of Bob's. And she's like, you shared a stage with Bob. Like, you know, you guys were having discussions. You were on equal footing at this point. It's an amazing testament. And I kind of was like, you know, yeah, I don't know. So, and at the end, we were lucky enough. I signed a book to Bob, and I basically just wrote a note just saying, thank you so much for, you know, all that you did for me. And, you know, you basically made me who I am by that one simple act. And, you know, I gave him the book, and then I asked Bob to sign a book for me. And I didn't, you know, he signed it, and we kind of talked. I didn't look at it until I was in the car on the way home. And, he wrote, no, we had a car tip us. But so what he wrote was, Chris, thanks for letting me share the stage. All the best. Love, Bob McGrath. So what Audra, my wife, had said was, you know, you shared a stage, you were there. And he wrote that. So it was just like, oh my God, this is like the most magical day you could imagine. And, you know, I'd taken pictures. I sent them to my friend Brad, who writes the books. And I was like, they surprised me with Bob McGrath. He's like, what? He goes, that is so awesome. I wish I was there. You know, I was like, yeah. I mean, you know, and then everybody who was there, they couldn't believe it. And they were just, you know, gobsmacked as much as I was. So, and we were lucky enough to see former Mickey Miler, Rich Gehring came out to say hello. And it was great to see him and his family. And they were a delight. So it was just a really, just a great day. So.
Well, Chris, so, we are sorry that we have to cut this off.
Yeah, that's
we
it.
We talk about this forever, but we think you're pretty awesome too, and congratulations. That's a great, great story.
It happened to a nice guy.
Yeah, you work so hard. That's wonderful.
Michelle.
Pardon me?
You can have it to a nicer guy, except Michelle.
Oh, okay. Am I a guy now? Okay.
You're a nice guy, Michelle. Yeah.
Okay. Alrighty. Well, anyway, thank you, Chris Eliopoulos, for sharing your story. And Mike Scopa of the Quiet Mike Scopa.
This was enjoyable. I love sitting back and just listening.
Listening to a great storytelling. Great storytelling.
In all sincerity, you deserve
Oh, please. I don't know if I deserve anything, but it's fun to just share it with you guys. Because, again, I'm nobody. I'm just like everybody in the audience. I'm just like anybody else. But it's fun to just share these things, not out of ego, but just out of like, can you believe this happened? This is so cool.
That's awesome. All right. So for Chris Eliopoulos, for Bob McGrath, for Mike Scopa, I am Michelle Scribner-McLean, and we will see you on the road and in the parks. The Mickey Miles podcast is brought to you by MEI Travel and Mouse Fan Travel, who will handle your family vacation, reunion, honeymoon, corporate incentive trip, or getaway as if it were their own, bringing premium service and expert advice to help you get the most out of your vacation dollar. Visit them at mei-travel.com or mousefantravel.com.
We hope you enjoyed listening to today's episode of the Mickey Miles and More podcast. If you would like to support the podcast, please go to mickeymiles.podbean.com and click the green Become a Patron button in the upper right-hand corner of the menu bar. We thank you for your support. Don't forget, our discussion continues on Facebook at facebook.com/Mickey Miles Podcast. You can also follow us on Twitter at twitter.com/Mickey Miles Pod. Last of all, don't forget, if you have any questions for us, you can send them to questions@MickeyMilesPodcast.com. We'll try to answer them as soon as possible. For all of us here at the Mickey Miles and More Podcast, this is Rick Gregg saying thanks for listening and all your support. And until next time, we'll see you on the road.